Ellis East Elementary Walkthrough, May 18th. Classroom 2C. Whoa. Okay, so the thing is, this room is like all of the other classrooms. Walls painted white, hardwood floors, black slate chalkboards. I've documented quite extensively what the classrooms in the school look like, but this, there are tables with what looks like high tea set out in this one. Like, to be clear, there's no food. The building has been empty for a few years, but the tables are decked out with everything else for a tea party. On the table closest to me, there's a tea set with a hydrangea pattern, lace tablecloths, silverware, tiered trays, the works.
Lucy, where are you? Billy?
Good morning.
What happened?
I'm not sure. But you were gone for about 18 hours, just missing.
So it was real. The third floor, Lucy...
I'm sorry, what?
I can fill you in later. I have to get up into the archives now.
You are on bed rest. For at least the next few days. It's the doctor's orders.
Please, Billy, it's urgent.
If you promise to take resting seriously, I can bring the files to you. One box at a time, but you'll have to take a break in between boxes, and you have to go to bed early.
Deal.
Okay, where should we start?
Let's look into any records from the years 1994 to 1998. I think whatever happened while I was here. I've also got the last few field notes from my grandmother to read.
Audio diary of Dr. Anna Georgina Plume, recorded from bed rest. Still not sure about the date and time because I'm too exhausted to get up. But the memories keep coming back to me from my early days here. There was, of course, George, my disappearing friend in first grade. But now that I think about it, he wasn't the only one. Though I would not necessarily consider the other one to be a friend. In second grade, one of the third grade boys seemed to always be hanging around the edges of the playground. I didn't recognize him from previous years at the school, and we had so few new students. I spent a lot of time in those years reading books and observing my classmates, so I realized I never saw him talking to anyone. "Why are you always alone?" he asked one day, startling me out of my chapter book. The way he asked seemed unnecessarily mean. "Don't you have any friends?" I was shy, so I didn't really have many friends, but that felt like none of his business. "You're always alone, too," I retorted. "Yeah, but I want to be," he literally sneered these words. "Maybe I want to be, too." "No, you just can't find anyone to play with you." "I want to read my book." I was too nice to tell him to leave me alone, so I hoped the idea was conveyed by the statement. "You just say that because no one will be your friend." Fortunately, the conversation did not continue as the whistle signaled the end of second grade recess. After that, I tried to stay away from the boy. It was also then that I noticed how different he was from all the other children. I may have held back around my peers, but there were still small interactions. When he wasn't antagonizing me, he didn't talk to anyone else, and no one else talked to him. In fact, they frequently walked right past him with no acknowledgement. Actually, no. It wasn't even a lack of acknowledgement, it was a lack of awareness, like they didn't see him. I also noticed that at a distance, his face seemed to fade and any color left, he washed to gray. And unlike George, I never saw him in the school. I don't know why this memory came back to me just now, but I wanted to get it recorded before I forgot. However, I think this is enough exertion for right now. I am going to take a nap and gather my thoughts later.
Here is the last of it. I'm glad you were able to put everything into boxes before your trip upstairs. Anyway, remember, we agreed upon one box.
Yes, Mom.
So how does this new direction from Lucy align with your plan to map the school and get answers from your family?
You forget that the first part of that plan was going through the records.
Okay.
But how do you feel about taking on the mapping until I'm back on my feet? I've got the records and my dad is coming over tomorrow. That should help with the family piece.
I will gladly take on the mapping if it keeps you resting.
Okay. In that case, I have one more entry of Nana Plume's field notes.
I'll give you some space to record. Do you want the door open or shut?
It doesn't really matter. The building seems to decide for themselves these days.
All right. You've got 2 hours, and then you're having an herbal tea and a nap.
Yes, Mom.
Okay. So now I'm going to finish up Nana Plume's field notes from the summer she was here and working on her PhD research. The last entry cut off rather suddenly, which brings us here. June 10th, 1954. Sophia did not give me any answers about what was happening with the man who came upstairs yesterday, but I am fairly certain she is shaken by the whole encounter because she has not left my side today. She has been sitting across the table where I review my documents, reading a pulp novel while I work. I have asked several times, but she keeps saying that it is not yet the right time. I am trying not to be distracted from my research, but this is just odd. June 11th, 1954. The man appeared again today, but he disappeared when he saw Sophia was with me. She told me to meet her tonight in the front vestibule because something must be done. June 12th, 1954.
Last night, I met Sophia in the front vestibule, as she urged me earlier. I had not expected, but she was not alone. In fact, all of the women in my family were joining us.
Great-Grandma Lucy, Great-Grandma Helena, Grandma, and Mother were all waiting with Sophia when I arrived. Sophia asked me to offer something of value as a sacrifice for the ceremony. Sensing the gravity of the situation, I offered my engagement ring, but Sophia shook her head, stating that it need not be that valuable. The only other item of value I could offer was a charm bracelet that my childhood friend had given me with a menagerie of carousel animals. This offering was deemed appropriate. What followed, I am discouraged from writing lest the record be used to undo what has been done, but the bracelet was buried at the base of the oak tree with a hole in the roots. A.G. Plume Commentary.
I'm starting to get frustrated with these ceremonies that cannot be documented. I understand their reasoning, but as a researcher, I can't agree with that decision.
Final entry. June 13th, 1954. I had a long conversation with Great-Grandma Lucy and Mother last night. I have decided that upon finishing my coursework, Arthur and I will return to Ellis Field full-time while I write my dissertation. I need to stay here and watch the school, lest these events happen again. A.G. Plume Commentary. It seems the entire family keeps converging on this town, this building.
What secrets do you hold?
Audio Diary of Anna Georgina Plume. I've remembered more of the story from before. The bully only I could see. In addition to only interacting with me, I noticed more odd patterns of behavior. He seemed to stick to the shadows. Maybe he came to me because I was the only one who regularly sat in the shade of the building, but he definitely did not seem to go in direct sunlight. He would wander a little further when a cloud covered the sun, but never seemed to dare to go too far. Perhaps because when the clouds moved, there was nowhere for him to go. He also never touched me. He did ask to see my book once, and I, naively trusting, held it out, but he only grabbed at the corner, taking it from my hands before throwing it across the playground. I did not give him anything else again. I noticed it escalating. I saw him more, and he seemed to be meaner each time. I found myself dreading going to school, dreading the part of the day where I would see him. I always found myself at ease when I returned into the building, but even the recesses we didn't share with third grade, I found myself seeing him in the shadows before he would disappear. Then one day, I saw him in the school for the first time. I was exploring the hallways, which I did sometimes when I got bored in class. I never thought about it before, but it is somewhat weird that I got away with that. I was walking down the back hallway of the first floor when I heard him whispering at me. He was in the shadows in the small staircase that leads down towards the basement. Yes, I realize how bad that sounds, and I didn't even fully remember this until just now. He told me to come down there with him. I knew in my heart of hearts that if I went down there, it would not end well for me. But something compelled me to follow him down the ragged wooden stairs of the basement. As I followed him, I noticed he had been holding some sort of light, but with each step it faded. While he appeared to be very light on his feet, the stairs started to rock with his footsteps, and I found myself losing balance with every step. I tried to turn around when the door slammed shut. His light went out, and the shaking intensified until I fell down the stairs. Wait, how did I not remember this? How could I forget? My ankle rolled and twisted, and I heard the wood snap underneath me. I landed at the base of the stairs in the splinters. I cried out in pain, and he laughed. But his laugh was wrong. I know you might expect that it sounded evil or demonic or unhinged, but it was not that. It sounded rehearsed, like he had never laughed before and was trying to approximate it from what he had heard. I noticed a shadow that looked like his shape standing over me, and I screamed for my life. At which point, I was scooped up by, well, a man in Victorian-era clothing. He was kind, and he said some things I didn't understand in a firm voice. The darkness around us seemed to lighten, not like a light turned on, but as if it got less scary suddenly, like a weight had lifted. He told me he would get me upstairs to Helena. I guess I just assumed he meant Nana Plume, but now I think I met James Reeve. It gets kind of fuzzy from there, but I came to in the emergency room, surrounded by my concerned family. I don't know what happened to the boy, but I was relieved to never see him again. I am feeling better for the first time in days. I am cleared to take a walk around the schoolyard. It is a beautiful evening. I love taking walks during the golden and blue hours. I am coming up on the tree by the janitor's shed, the one with the hole in the roots. The last time I was here, I found a charm. I wonder what's there. It appears to be an old jewelry box. Oh my goodness. It is an emerald Art Deco style necklace that resembles a carousel. It has a number of animal charms with 4 empty spots. I think I have the other charms in my office. Ellis East Elementary walkthrough, May 18th. There are about 10 round tables, and each is decorated in different themes. There are a range of florals, some galaxy-themed, and one looks like Alice in Wonderland. I'm walking around the tables, and it seems like the table in the center has a vase of freshly picked flowers. The more I look at it, This all looks newly set. Why is this here? Everything left in the other rooms, apart from the carousel, appears to have just been left behind, but this is perfectly placed here. Someone did this on purpose. Has someone been inside here? Why? I have to ask Marianne if she knows what's happening here. It's a really beautiful setup. It's just unsettling to think that someone just came in here and put together a whole tea party. Place cards on the table. Miss Hobbs, Mrs. Reeve, Mrs. Messinger. Those names all seem to be familiar. Maybe they rented out the building for an event? I am going to choose to believe that that is what happened. And with that, I am going to go next door to the small Title I classroom and then continue on to Classroom 3A. Lavender Evening Fog is a fiction podcast. This episode was written by Victoria Dickman Burnett, with direction and script supervision by Ben Baird, produced, mixed, and edited by Nick Federinko, with additional editing by Victoria Dickman Burnett. Executive producers are Ben Baird and Victoria Dickman Burnett. The voice of Anna Georgina Plume is Victoria Dickman Burnett. The voice of Billy is Nick Federinko. The Lavender Evening Fog logo was designed by Allison Dickman, and Ms. Bitey, our carousel opossum, was designed by Matt Lowe. This episode has been brought to you by animals having better sense than people. This episode pairs well with a creamy milk oolong.